What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
I was so excited for Game 6 that I thought it was going to be on Monday, and Victoria sent me a message yesterday saying, about your tweet, the game is actually on Tuesday, to which I thought, right. So I corrected it, and luckily on Twitter I have this, like, you have 60 minutes to edit something, so you don't need to redo the whole thing, you just put in a word. But I can't wait for Game 6. I'll be honest, it shouldn't even be at Game 6. It may not even should have been even at Game 5. But we'll get into that. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash. Coming up, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. We've been wanting to have Stephen on for a while. He's down in Sunrise. He'll get us more of a closer perspective. The team's practicing today in advance of Game 6 coming up tomorrow. We'll also talk some UFAs going on in the NHL and Olympic rosters also, which is great, by the way. The fact that we're actually putting the word Olympic in with NHL, I think that's good.
We've been waiting for it for a long time. So they are, all the countries get to nail down six players today just to start putting the roster together. Not a lot of surprises. We'll touch on it a little bit.
Okay, let's get into Game 6. Before we do, let's kind of look at the series in general. It is now 3-2 for the Florida Panthers. The Panthers losing Game 4 in overtime on that deflected goal by Leon Draisaitl. They come back and they make a statement in winning 5-2. Here's my outlook quickly on it, and you can pick this up when I'm done. Three of the five games have gone to overtime. The other two games have been decidedly Panthers, 6-1 and 5-2. In that first game, when the Panthers did lose an OT, they could have won. In the other game, it went to OT that they lost, Game 4, they could have won. Overtimes are one-shot periods. That's it. If one shot goes in, it's done. You don't have 18 minutes left to go to try to tie the thing up. My whole point in this, this could have been a sweep. It could have been done in four if the Panthers had a couple more gifts, I guess, in overtime. They also had that Game 3 victory, 6-1.
If you're saying that the Panthers are the better hockey team in this series, I agree with you. I think most people would agree with you.
That was a real roundabout way of saying the Panthers are better, yes.
But here's the other thing, Ryan.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily matter. Right. Just as you said, we have two games left max, one minimum, two maximum. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is a game of bounces. It is a game of inches. The Oilers don't need to be the better hockey team in general. They need to be the better hockey team in Game 6. Yeah. And they need to be the better hockey team in Game 7. I'm going to check myself on that. They need to also be the more fortunate team in Game 6 and the more fortunate team in Game 7. Because at this stage of the season, anybody can win a single hockey game. And we have, again, a maximum two left. So it might not matter. The Panthers could be that much better. But if the Oilers figure out what to do in 60 minutes in Game 6 and then 60 minutes, again, minimum in Game 7, they can still win the Stanley Cup. It can still happen.
I don't think it is going to happen, to be honest. I was not surprised that the Panthers, and Edmonton's done this too. Edmonton, we've seen against the Kings, they were down 0-2. They lost that first game to Dallas. They didn't look very good, but they came back. They have shown us that they can be a very good responsive team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But so too have the Panthers. Mm-hmm. And in that Game 4, when that goal went in, I was at the arena and everyone, there was no booing. The sense I got to after when I saw some of the players was that, yeah, okay, it's just a game.
You're
talking about
the Draisaitl winner.
Yeah,
the Draisaitl winner went in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, there was just no panic. And I'm sure that when it did, and even Bobrovsky, you know, he said, oh yeah, it's done. Let's move on. Like, you know, okay, we've been there, done this before kind of thing. So the Panthers are a better team. Again, in those two games, Edmonton has not won decisively in any of these games. Their wins have come in overtime. So that, to me, is the biggest difference. So again, to your point, Edmonton needs to do a full 60, maybe more if need be, in Game 6. But they need to do the best 60 minutes of hockey that they can. But I just don't think that they can be able to do that without the Panthers finding a way to win game six.
Okay.
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
We'll get to our predictions in a second.
Okay.
But first, let's start with this.
I gave you mine.
Well, you didn't give a score. That's why I'm cutting you off.
Didn't give the score.
Didn't give the score yet.
Yeah.
What do the Oilers need to do? And we talked about this last show, and we talked about it the previous show. Again, what do the Oilers need to do to have a shot at winning game six?
Here's my answer. And it's a vague one. I don't know. I honestly don't know what they can do and they can try to do differently. Because I do think if they try to push and they play a bit differently or they're more aggressive, again, all their wins have come in overtime. There's been, I can't go, say Edmonton won game two, 5-0. Okay. My answer would be, whatever you did in game two, do it again in game six, because everything worked. I don't think they're still trying to figure out, and we'll get to the goaltending situation in a second, but they're trying to figure out line juggling. They're trying to figure out the goaltending situation. When you're doing that going into a game six of a Stanley Cup final, you've got a problem. That's what I think. So to be honest, I don't know. If I were to throw it to you, I'm going to throw you the question. What do you think they need to do?
They need to play like they did in that second and third period of game four. They need to be fast.
Okay.
They need to get pucks in deep. I know I hate the expression, but they do. They just do.
I know. Yep.
They have to be more physical. I think they had 21 hits or 20-something hits last game. Evander Kane had two. That ain't going to cut it. That's not going to cut it against the Panthers. Speed, play more physical, and they need to get good goaltending. One other bit here. I mean, they've been outscored by a gajillion in the first period. It's actually rather embarrassing. Score the first effing goal.
Score first. Yeah.
That's the recipe. They're fast. They're physical. They don't take undisciplined penalties. That was an issue in games as well. Score first. And I think they're in it, Ryan. I'm not counting them out yet.
The goaltending situation. So the discussion after game number five was, well, after game four was, who are you going to start a goal? Because Stuart Skinner was pulled again. And Edmonton did come back and they found a way to get it done. And Calvin Pickard's numbers, he did lose game number five. So he's now 7-1. He had to lose it. Well, he didn't have to lose at some point, but you would have thought he would have lost at some point, and he did. So now Chris Knobloch, again, he's kind of mum on the situation. He does not know who
he's going
to go to.
It's a very tough decision. That's his message right now. It's a very tough decision.
Here's what's the concern for me, is the save percentage by both of these goaltenders. Stuart Skinner in 14 starts, and yes, the whole thing when he went on that magical run, and if he didn't post an 800 save percentage, he was shutting out the opposition. But his save percentage is 891. Pickard's is 886, smaller sample size, but they're both below 900. You're not going to win anything, I don't think, unless they come back and win game six, and then they win game seven, I will stand corrected. But I just don't think with those numbers that it's good enough to win. I would go with Calvin Pickard. That's just me, just because, as you know, I've been riding the Pickard train for so long.
You're going to feel a bit surprised, I believe, by this, because I think you would expect me to say, go back to your number one. They lost game five. Go to Stuart Skinner, the guy.
You're going with Pickard.
I'm going with Pickard in this one.
Finally. Took me to game six to finally convince you. My job is done.
You have convinced me to the degree that I think the team plays at, last game notwithstanding. The team does play better in front of him. I don't think that's fair to Stuart Skinner. It doesn't matter. The team plays better in front of him. 7-0 before losing game five. It wasn't his fault they lost game five. Calvin Pickard is not responsible for the only three shots on net in the first period. So just for some continuity, instead of the flip-flop, and this is a toughie for me. It's not clear-cut Calvin Pickard for me. I should say that.
Okay.
If Knobloch goes with Skinner, okay, shrug of the shoulders. I guess that's, they know stuff that I don't. Fine. But here's what they do need to do. Both of those goaltenders have to be assured by every member of the coaching staff, by all of their teammates, that they're all in on both of them.
Right.
Because it is going to be a hook short leash for whoever starts. Because they got to win game six. There's no more losses here, Ryan.
Nope.
So if somebody's floundering, whoever it is, the other fella needs to go in and needs to be rock solid. And it has to start mentally. They have to feel confident in themselves going into that game. So we'll see how they handle that.
We talked again about Skinner and Calvin Pickard and goal for Edmonton. You put down in the lineup a bit more love for Bobrovsky. I could not agree with you more. The numbers, 15-7, 2.26 goals against, 912 save percentage, 22 starts. He's played every game for the Florida Panthers this season in the playoffs. And to still have those numbers, I think, is incredible. time now for you to show some love.
Who's the backup for the Florida Panthers, Ryan?
No idea.
I think you do know.
Vanacek.
It's Vitek Vanacek. If you ask anybody watching this series, I think everybody would have to take a pause. Nothing against Vanacek. He just hasn't. You haven't seen a single glimpse of the guy except in warmups.
Sure.
So the fact that Bob has played, the other numbers are impressive that you just listed off. The fact that he has played every single game and he has responded well to poorer performances. He's come back strong. Everybody out front of him knows exactly what they're getting from that guy back there. So even if he does lay an egg, he's going to return with a solid performance. And that's why the Panthers are even more in the driver's seat, having to win one of two of the final games.
First couple of games of the series, again, they went to overtime and he faced 46 shots. I remember when we did the show on the second, after the second one, I said the exact same amount of shots, 46. Mm-hmm. And then it went down to 33 in game three, a little bit back up, not by much, only by two, to 35 in game four. But then it went down to 21. So going back to, again, the whole dominant performance by the Panthers, give them a ton of credit, too, because the defense and the forechecking and the backchecking, whatever else the guys did in front of Bobrovsky, he only had to face 21 shots. So whether that's the Panthers doing good or Edmonton just not getting things toward the net, whatever it is. But the fact is that the lowest number of shots that he faced was in game number five. So Vicky, we talked about it. The Panthers had the edge going into the series when it came to goaltending, by far.
And now we're really starting to see that. Yeah. Quick question on the goaltending for you. Mm-hmm. Chris Knobloch says he as of Sunday night, or Monday morning, I should say, says he hasn't made up his mind yet. They're still thinking about who's going into net. Do you believe that? Or do you think they already know?
No, I do.
You think that they don't know yet who they're going to start?
I think they may
That's
be leaning.
Wild to me.
Yeah. No. They may be leaning toward one than the other, but I don't think they've made the firm, concrete decision. And the reason is just because there's been so much flip-flopping in the last couple of games. If I was the head coach, say 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I have a meeting with the rest of my coaching staff. Oh, maybe we're going to go this way. But then by 3 o'clock, I think, you know what? Hold on a second here. Maybe we should go back to Picker. I do believe that he has not made up his mind completely.
That's interesting to me. Game six of the Stanley Cup final, day before, and the head coach still doesn't necessarily know who's in the crease.
And that's
one
of the biggest stories. Yeah, when you're still doing that, when you have that issue in goal, when you don't know. You just said about the Panthers and how they go out there in front of Bobrovsky. They know what they have in goal every night. They know what they have in goal. Edmonton doesn't know now. And that gets in your mind. Because if you make one mistake, everyone's going to look down the bench and look at each other. Here we go again. Is coach going to put in Skinner? If Skinner isn't starting, is coach going to put in what's next? So that's something you don't need to be doing. You need to be focusing on goals. That's what you need to be doing to win the game. You don't need to be thinking about who's going to be in goal to try to help your team win. Game six prediction. You know, obviously which direction I'm going in, but I'll tell you the score in a second. Who do you have?
I'm going to go with the Oilers because of wishful thinking. And I'm going to go
You've
with
You've been saying
two.
This the whole series. You but want this to go seven.
Ryan
you want
Payton,
that? Yeah, I know. Yes.
Ryan Murray Payton, the last time that we did a show, I predicted that the Oilers were going to prove resilient, come back, and win. That was game four. And I said by a score of 5-3. They won by a score of 5-4. Hey. Not too bad. Not too bad.
No, I'll give that to you.
4-2 Oilers. McDavid
if
and...
If I was there, I'm patting you on the back right now. That's what I'm doing. I'm
Thank
visually
you.
Giving you a pat on the back.
Draisaitl and McDavid win this one. I'm not saying that they win the cup, and I'm not saying they win game seven, but they win game six. 4-2.
Okay. 4-2. Empty net goal? Empty net goal?
Yeah. 3-2 and then an empty netter.
3-2 and... Okay.
Sounds good.
I'm sticking with the prediction. I had the Panthers in six, so I'm going to stick with
you
that.
I can't sway now.
Florida's going to win this one. And what was last game? 5-2.
Yeah.
The other game that they won decisively, 6-2. The other ones, 4-3, 5-4, all that. I'm going to go with 4-2, different than you. 4-2 with an empty net goal.
Boom.
And the empty net goal will be scored by none other than Brad Marchand.
Okay, give me Pod Colson for the empty netter then. For the Oilers.
Okay. Do you want to talk about Marchand and Bennett, or do you want to wait for Steven to do that? About who
we'll
do we
a
think
little
is...
bit. Well, we're going to talk about UFAs. So
yes, we'll talk about you. Okay, let's get into that. So Marchand, and again, there's three right now for the Panthers if they do win this thing that are locks for the Conn Smythe: Brad Marchand, Sam Bennett, and also Sergei Bobrovsky. I'd put Bobrovsky in there as well. But Bennett and Marchand, it's their cut. It's their cup. It's their trophy to lose. Mm-hmm. Here's the way I'm looking at it. Brad Marchand has been great. So too has Sam Bennett. Brad Marchand has been really good in the Stanley Cup final in the first five games. Mm-hmm. Sam Bennett's been good. Sam Bennett, though, I think has been better in the first three rounds plus these five games overall. Yes. And the goal total is sexy. What did we say? Two at home and,
yeah, 14. 13 on the road. He has 15 goals, 13 on the road and two at home. And that's just jaw-dropping in and of itself.
So just based on that and the whole goal total, then I would probably – look, if I'd love the league to split it. I really would. I'd love them to give it both ways. But based on that, I would probably lean toward Sam Bennett.
He's the odds-on favorite right now. Mm-hmm. The bookies always know stuff we don't. So that's what I always believe. And the fact he is a little bit of a heavy favorite too. Marchand is second, but he's plus 400 with some of the agents. And that's substantial, whereas Bennett is in the negatives, right? So right now, if Brad Marchand scores a hat trick to win game six in overtime, then it's back up in the air.
But
I would give the edge to Sam Bennett right now. UFA-wise, how much does he get paid?
Who?
Let's Bennett first.
It's not going to be 10.
But close?
I would say it's at least 9. That's at least 9. And with Marchand, again, the age factor to go in, maybe give him a 3-year contract. I know he's probably got more than 3 years left, but who knows? I mean, the guy's playing out of his mind. I would say that he's pretty much close to, oh gosh, Marchand made 6.13 this past season. Do I want to say 8? 7.5? I don't know.
Bananas. Before this postseason, we were talking Sam Bennett. 7.5.
Who made 4.43 last season?
Right.
He's going to more than double. Yeah.
And no, you can't pay him more than Sam Reinhardt on your team, et cetera, et cetera. And now we're talking 8 and 9 for Sam Bennett. Yeah. Marchand's number was much lower. Now there's people who are floating 4 years, 8 per. I'm just like, that is crazy train.
Hey, you know what's crazy?
You're worth what you're paid.
You know what's even crazier? Is that guess how many points the two of them had? And again, Brad Marchand had time in Boston and Florida. Guess how many points each of them had during the regular season? This will be astonishing based on the numbers we just talked about.
Well, Bennett's about 50, right? It's not in front of me.
Both had 51.
Okay.
So if they just had 51 and say both of them were very quiet in the four rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs, no one's going to be saying you're going to make 9 or 10. No one's going to say Marchand's going to get up to 9 or something like that. But the fact that they're doing what they're doing, you have to do that.
And what's more valuable, having 110 points in the regular season or winning 100%. Your team a Stanley Cup? Yep. And that's what you're going to be paid for. And that's what Bennett and Marchand are going to be paid for.
And that is I don't know if you meant to do this, but that is one of the most beautiful segues that I've ever heard you do, because Mitch Marner had 102 points last season. Is he going to get 13.5, 14?
Yes.
But what is that? That's not, 102 points is impressive, but it doesn't win you a cup. It didn't win you a cup. So what's he going to get? Because there's the number of 14. I think that would be absolutely ludicrous.
He's going to get at least 13. We know that.
I agree.
13.5. But again, you're worth what somebody's willing to pay you, right? Yeah. That's all there is
to
it. Vegas forge a deal right now with the Leafs. Vegas can then sign him for 8 years, 8, 13.5, and there you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that do think that he's going to be heading to Vegas. Again, some of the other names on the list: Nick Ehlers is a UFA, John Tavares, of course, UFA,
Mikhail
Grant, Matt Duchene, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews. I think I was reading where there's Winnipeg in the mix, Colorado in the mix, Toronto in the
Toronto,
mix as well.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Anyway, it's always exciting. Quickly, again, before we get Stephen Wino on of the AP, he's down in Sunrise, and we'll get his take on the series to date and also Game 6. Tomorrow night, Tuesday, not Monday night, not tonight. The Olympic rosters, Vic, always good. We said this off the top of the show that it's good to now talk about the Olympics as something is going to happen with NHL teams.
So the countries get to nail down 6 players and release them today on Monday, June 16th. And no real surprises. I sort of gave all the rosters a bit of a glance. One thing that stood out to me, Gabriel Landeskog is on the Swedish team, which you would expect to have happen, but it just confirms again that he's back in the hockey mix, and that made me smile. I did not recognize a single name on the Italian team, not one. They all play in Europe. Good for them. We're going to root for them pretty hard. Did not recognize a single name. And JJ Paterka was left off the German roster instead of a couple other players, and that was pointed out on social media, and I agree with those who pointed that out on social media that that was a bit of an oddity. JD Paterka is going to play for the German team. There's not going to be any question of that, but the little bit of the jab of not putting him on initially instead of a couple other players, I just found that intriguing, we'll put it that way.
So the first six again for Germany, this is awesome. They're going to participate. Actually, for the NHL, they're going to do this for the first time in a long time. But for Germany, this is their preliminary one. Leon Draisaitl, no surprise. Philipp Grubauer, Lukas Reichel, Moritz Seider, Nico Sturm, and Tim Stützle. So if you want to take one of those off and then put in Paterka, as you said. But yeah, I mean, he absolutely
is. There's
play.
A couple so, that I would maybe
there's
discuss
a couple.
Having instead off instead of JJ Paterka. But Paterka's going to play for this squad. It doesn't matter.
Going to be fun. The Olympics just around the corner, but we have to get through the Stanley Cup final first, and then, of course, some of the season next year, of course. But we'll take a break. We'll come back. Stephen Wino, AP, will join us, and we'll dive back into the first five games of the series between the Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers and get you set for Game 6. Do or die for Edmonton. It is their Game 7 tomorrow night. Pucks and 7, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matias, Stephen Wino coming up.
Welcome back to Pucks and 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Madiash.
So here's the biggest question going into Game 6. Will the sun set and not rise again for the Edmonton Oilers? That's the biggest thing I know, Victoria. Get your head out of there. I was planning this for Stephen for a couple of days
now. You weren't even 5 seconds in.
I know.
Go ahead.
Get it out of the way now so Stephen can actually stay on. He doesn't have a choice to leave. But anyway, Stephen Wino joining us here. AP covering the Stanley Cup Final. Game 6 coming up tomorrow night. Stephen, great to have you on. Again, this is a game seven tomorrow for Edmonton. Before we get into what's to come in game six, let's look back to the first few games, the first five, and that game five as well for the Panthers, because I said three of the five games have gone to overtime. The other two have been decisively in Florida's favor, 6-1 and 5-2. So essentially, based on a couple of different bounces, say in the games they lost in OT, this could have been done in four. I know it hasn't been, but it's just my point. It was a really good performance by the Panthers in game five.
It was. It was almost a bigger blowout than the 6-1 in game three. It really was, because that game sort of got away from the Oilers and they started to goon it up a little bit, and like that became a blowout by score. This was a blowout just by the numbers. This turned into the Panthers were men and the Oilers were boys. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how that happens to Edmonton on home ice in that situation, but it did. I mean, it wasn't Calvin Pickard's fault. It just felt like the entire team was flat. It really did feel like everyone's been talking about this is the oldest team in the league. They look like the oldest team in the league. And you say all the positives about experience, but when you're flying and don't have a day to recover, Corey Perry looked like it. All the guys who, like, whatever, 15 players, 30 or older, looked like it in that game. And the Panthers just had that jump. And Brad Marchand is also the second oldest player in that series and was not affected by this.
No.
So I don't know how much of that is the Panthers' sports science, how great a shape this monster guy is in. But, like, the Panthers were prepared for that situation. And just rolled. I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky, Paul Maurice pointed out, made some great saves early that sort of changed the tenor of the game. And Chris Knobloch sort of acknowledged that if they had gotten a first goal in that game, maybe it sort of plays out differently. But it didn't happen. They have an all-world goaltender. They're able to pounce on mistakes. Brad Marchand is a heads-up player. And the Panthers just look like just an unstoppable killing machine, as they have for 10 of the 11 playoff series they have played under Paul Maurice.
Yeah.
We're going to get to the goaltending situation in a bit for the Oilers, because that's obviously a hot discussion point right now.
It is? I didn't know that. Yeah.
before we get to that drama, what you've watched this series intimately, what did the Oilers need to do to give themselves a legitimate shot to draw back into this series and win game six?
They need to score first. And I know this is such a cliche, and I hate talking about it all the time. But, like, if they don't score first and the Panthers are able to lock down like they did in Game 7 last year, like they did in Game 5, they have no chance. Like, they're literally falling behind is not an option. Like, failure is not an option for Apollo 13. falling behind is not an option for the Edmonton Oilers. It's just not. The game changes so drastically, and Chris Nalak says everybody wants to get off to a good start. Everybody wants to score first. Of course they do. It matters so much more for the Oilers than it does the Panthers because they can't play from behind against this team. And I know they've done it. Mm-hmm. They've come from down 3-0. They've won the game in overtime. I understand all that. The way the Panthers lock down at home when they smell blood, when they know that the Stanley Cup is in the building and they have a chance to win it.
Yep.
To me, the first 5 to 10 minutes of this game tomorrow night on Tuesday night, this is the biggest deal on earth for the Oilers. And look, it might be the fact that the Panthers get a breakaway off the opening shift and they score and the whole thing's over immediately. But if the Oilers can control the game and start to do that and make the Panthers take chances, this is what they did to the Dallas Stars in the Western Conference Final.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When they took a lead, the Stars would take chances. They mm-hmm. would pounce on, get an odd man rush. McDavid would get the puck and it would just go the other way. And they rolled in that series as a result. But they were getting ahead of the game, getting ahead of the Dallas Stars, and the Oilers have not been able to do that. They've allowed the first goal in 5 consecutive games of this final.
If they don't do it, it's Edmonton, we have a problem, not Houston, we have a problem.
Based yes. on that Apollo 13 reference.
And you know what? You can say this to any team. It's a fact in hockey, most sports too. You play differently with the lead. You play differently when you're chasing. It's just the facts. Evander Kane, I want to throw this at you because the ice time has decreased quite a bit. And I know he's been in some penalty issues. And I know in game 4, the ice time, I think, went down to 13 minutes and changed something. Like there was at some point on the ice, I looked around thinking, is he even playing? If the Edmonton Oilers have any chance, again, they have to do everything right coming up tomorrow night. But he's got to be smart. And I've said this, Stephen, time and time again with him. When he wants to be, when he's mentally engaged, he can be an X factor, but he can be one for Edmonton in a good way, but he can also be a bad one in the way for the Florida Panthers.
Right, Ryan. And remember, the Oilers didn't have Evander Kane 100% last year yep. in that series. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things they pointed to, guys, going into the series this year is, even without Zach Hyman, who they really missed terribly.
Yeah.
But having Evander Kane at his best really does help the Oilers in this series. And he can't be taking penalties. He can't be taking dumb stick fouls mm-hmm. that are going to get called. There's a lot in the playoffs that gets sort of let go, a little hook here, an interference there. But when you're high-sticking a guy or you're getting your stick in someone's skates, they're going to call it every single time.
Every time.
And Evander Kane looked like a guy who was fresher, and sort of early in this playoff run, and even in the first couple games of the series, looked good at being sort of that X-factor guy to make up for the loss of Zach Hyman. But if he's spending more time in the penalty box than he is on the ice, which he was for part of game 3, I guess, of the series, you can't win like that. And this is the problem Chris Knobloch has right now is you're scratching Kasperi Kapanen, or you're scratching Jeff Skinner, or you're scratching Victor Arvidsson. You have to play Evander Kane. Mm-hmm. Like you almost don't have a choice to sit him out in this series, but he does hurt you if he's doing those dumb things. If he is on his game, he has his blinders on, mm-hmm. and actually is able to sort of play the game that he's used to playing, then, yeah, he's the guy who counters a Matthew Tkachuk, who makes this series a little closer to even. Then they've got the two best players in the series. Florida may have 3-10 or 3-12 or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Evander Kane has the ability to sort of augment that with being the sort of toughness, maybe a little bit of net front, like all the other stuff he does well. But yeah, he's got to stay out of the box.
He absolutely does. When he's disciplined, he's so incredibly effective. We are joined by Stephen Wino, who covers the game for the Associated Press, also the author of Odd Man In, Hockey's Emergency Goalies and the Wildest One-Day Job in Sports. It looks like an awesome book. It's who starts tomorrow night, Calvin Pickard or Stuart Skinner?
Victoria, it's got to be Stuart Skinner.
Does it?
It has to be. It has
really?
To be. It does.
Okay.
I do. I don't, look, I think Chris Knobloch and Steph already know this and haven't told us yet.
Okay.
I think this is a no-doubt decision for them. And just because Calvin Pickard gave them the boost they needed to win game 4, it wasn't his fault in game 5.
Sure.
I think you go back to your guy. I think this is a, if the Oilers are going to win the Stanley Cup somehow by winning these two games, Stuart Skinner has to be that sort of game 4 Stuart Skinner that we're mm-hmm. all talking about going into game 4, where he's making those kind of improbable saves and all that. Their numbers are so similar in this playoffs, but when you just watch those guys, Calvin Pickard looks like a journeyman goalie who's a little smaller, who's not as sort of fundamentally sound. Stuart Skinner looks like a guy who can win the Stanley Cup for you. And look, it's an uphill battle for this team, mm-hmm. and you still got to bet on the Florida Panthers in every possible scenario. But to me, it's Stuart Skinner. I don't think there's even a debate to this.
To follow up there, mm-hmm. you think this decision is already made?
I do. Okay. I do. And I we may find out. I mean, I'm going to practice here in a little bit. And I think there's a chance we find out now, unless Chris Knobloch really wants to keep up this whole idea. But you're losing the series. I think there's a confidence factor to giving the net back to Stuart Skinner.
Okay.
There was a fantastic moment on U.S. television the other night where Brian Boucher was asked, he was standing next to Stuart Skinner, and Kenny Albert and Eddie Olczyk said, I know you're standing next to Skinner. Yes or no question. Do they need to go back to Stuart Skinner? And he could have just said yes and moved on. He said yes, and you could hear him continually talk about, this is Stuart Skinner's net. He needs to go back to it. And you sort of see Stuart Skinner look up and like almost nod and be like, yeah, man, like I need to get back in the net. I think from a mental standpoint, Stuart Skinner has to get back in the net for the Edmonton Oilers.
This is one of the most polarizing.
Polarizing issue, and I can't believe ahead of Game 6, sorry to cut you off, Ryan, of Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final, having a polarizing discussion, because we'll ask somebody else, and they're like, no, it has to be Cal Pickard again. It's not his fault. He's 7-1 in the postseason. It's just such – I think it's wild we're having this conversation at this stage of the playoffs, but anyway.
And you know who's not having this conversation, Victoria? The Florida Panthers, who are starting Sergei Bobrovsky for a 64th consecutive playoff game.
Who's a backup for the Florida Panthers, Steven? I know you know, but
we know it's Vitek Vanacek. Yeah. He's my guy from Washington from years
ago.
Right,
of course.
And he got the game puck the other night from Jordan Gadjevich because for psyching out Stuart Skinner or just being around. I don't know Vitek Vanacek has not allowed a goal in the series,
He's been perfect.
He's been perfect.
Do the Panthers have any glaring weaknesses?
They don't have any glaring, obvious weaknesses.
Do they have anything minute?
I think their fourth line is a bunch of guys, and that's nothing against Jonah Gadjevich, Thomas Nosek, and AJ Greer. Mm-hmm. But when you have the Oilers, where you can throw out Matthias Janmark, Victor Arvidsson, and those guys, the Oilers should be able to take advantage of that, and they probably should have at home. And then you got like a third pair of Nate Schmidt and Dmitry Kulikov, where they're playing over their heads a little bit. Yeah. And the problem is the Oilers did not take advantage of that with home ice advantage when Chris Knobloch had a line match. But other than that, like, I don't know what their weakness is. This is a team that everyone was talking about the Oilers and sort of their scoring depth and everything throughout the playoffs, how many guys have scored goals. The Panthers have gotten that in this series. Like, they've gotten a goal from Kulikov. They've gotten a crazy amount of goals from Marchand and Sam Bennett, obviously, in the series. But they are able to literally roll four lines where Paul Maurice doesn't have to chase anything. They probably have the better coach. They have the better goalie. Mm-hmm. They have the better team. Mm-hmm. They don't have the best two players in the series. Yeah. At least if Leon Draisaitl and McDavid are up to that level. But this is from top to bottom, Bill Zito has done an incredible job building this team out. And who knows what's going to happen in free agency and what they're going to lose. But what they have right now in a top four of Mikkola, Ekblad, Seth Jones, and Gustav Forsling, what they have in those top three lines, and Brad Marchand's been nuts, and the young Finns and all that, it's hard to find a weakness around this team.
Let's get to free agency in 2 seconds, Stephen. But quickly, what happens in Game 6?
I think the Panthers win it. I think they smell blood. I don't have a good feel for anything in this series. Like I said, going into Game 5, you could tell me Calvin Pickard gets pulled in 5 minutes or has a 30-save shutout.
Right.
There's no feel for this series, and these coaches are right. There's no game-to-game momentum. I don't think anything that happened in Game 5 matters in Game 6. I just think the Panthers at home are just a monster. They figured out a recipe how to win, and they follow it.
UFA, unrestricted free agency, very intriguing going into the season. I think it's more intriguing next season just because of the names, not taking anything away from the names this season, but there's certainly a bunch of big ones coming up at the end of the 25-26 campaign. Where are you at with Mitch Marner? Term, where is he going to go? 99%, obviously, I'm never going to leave the window completely shut, but 99% chance he's not going back to Toronto.
Yeah, he's not going back to Toronto unless he has some – Unless the three ghosts of Leafs past, present, and future visit him in the middle of the night, I don't see any chance of Mitch Marner returning.
Yeah.
He's just had a bad experience there. I think he goes west. I do. I think he goes somewhere like Utah, Vegas, Anaheim, L.A., one of those teams where he's in a market where people care about hockey, but it's not life and death, where he doesn't necessarily have to be sort of the guy that leads him to a championship, but he can also be sort of the face of the franchise. He's a 100-point player. Mm-hmm. Like he's a great regular season player who, if you put him in the right situation, might thrive in the playoffs when the pressure is less or the pressure is different or whatever it is. Mitch Marner's a great player. I expect him to be on the Canadian Olympic team for sure. I'm thinking something in the neighborhood of $13 or $14 million over 7 years. He's going to find a new home. He's good. But like the Caps go, Brock Nelson just got $7.5 million times 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think we're all going to have a summer of readjusting to what players are worth. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a weird sort of, and GMs are going to have that same sort of thing. Agents and GMs of, okay, the cap's going to go up this and this and this for the next few years. Mitch Marner is going to be a $13, $14 million player, which means Connor McDavid is going to be a $16, $18 million player.
Right.
And so we're going to start to see a lot of these guys who we thought were four and a halves are now sixes.
Sure.
And so I think Mitch Marner is looking at something like 7x13 or 7x14.
Does Bradley Kevin Marchand make 4x8?
I think there's a neighborhood where he is in now. I mean, look at the playoffs he's had,
mm-hmm.
and maybe that's an insane number. But mm-hmm. if you're someone like, I don't know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you need someone like that, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's not possible. But now we're starting to hear rumblings he wants to go back to Florida. Could you imagine they bring back Bennett and Ekblad and Marchand somehow and just run this back?
Goodness.
I don't know if they can afford that, mm-hmm. but that would be insane.
Panthers, Tampa, like the state of Florida for hockey is so successful in the NHL. Last one before we get to 77 seconds again. I know you have to get to practice, so we'll get you in just a second. TJ Oshie, hung them up just a little bit on that for us.
Yeah, and like this was a guy who, first of all, from our standpoint, incredible to deal with. One of the best players in terms of always available, great talker, all of that, but won a championship with the Capitals, very famous for drinking the beer through his jersey at the parade and mm-hmm. sort of being a fan favorite. And who can forget that? I was in the building in Sochi 11 years ago when he had that shootout.
Yeah.
Still one of the greatest games I've ever seen in person. And Dan Bylsma texted me back the other day and said, we knew he was the shootout specialist back then. Like before he really became the player he was that guy on that roster for that reason. And they said he was – even when he wasn't scoring, he found something on Bobrovsky that the Oilers would love to figure out right now.
Yes.
If he can talk to TJ Oshie. If TJ Oshie wants to call Chris Knobloch right now and have some advice for the Oilers, they might want to use that. But just such a memorable moment. Great career. I still think he's going to have his number hanging in the Raptors in Washington at some point, mm-hmm. just because of his contributions to that team. But for as far as U.S. hockey and Olympic memories, it's one of the reasons why we love the NHL players in the Olympics was what TJ Oshie did. He was on the Today Show.
Mm-hmm.
He became sort of a superstar outside of hockey from that moment. And just a great career. I expect to see him in broadcasting at some point soon in Washington or on the national level in the U.S.
Seems like a real good guy as well. And mm-hmm. we'll miss him in the NHL. Okay, now let's get into 77 seconds with Steven. We'll give you seven questions. 77 seconds again. There's no timer, so let's go.
It's we're gonna quick give
you fire. The, we're going to give you the tough one off the top here. Who wins, say the Panthers win, who wins the Conn Smythe?
It's probably Sam Bennett. And Brad Marchand is really close. And I have a vote. And it's between those guys. I think we have to put a ballot in with 10 minutes left in the third period on Tuesday night, no matter what.
Okay.
Right now, it's Sam Bennett. But it's really close to being Brad Marchand.
Okay.
Nail down the location. Where does Mitch Marner play next year?
I'm going to say the Los Angeles Kings.
Oh,
and Andre Kopitar is going into his final season next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's sort of a changing of the guard happening with the Kings there. It's going to depend on what Mitch Marner and his wife and sort of their family want. It's going to be one of those four teams. I'm going to say the Kings right now.
One quick standout story from the book, Odd Man In, that you can share.
My favorite story is, nobody knew this, but back in 2010 when the Flyers played a million goalies on the way to the Cup Final,
yes.
their jersey off the back day, Brian Boucher was starting. They had to call up this kid, Carter Hutton, on an amateur tryout contract.
Mm.
And so he's sitting on the bench and he's like, some poor fan's going to get my jersey. And so like they draw it and some fan gets Carter Hutton, backup goalie. Someone's getting Chris Pronger and Claude Giroux or whatever. Someone gets Carter Hutton's jersey. And on the way home, like thinks about this, like, I don't need this. Calls the Flyers, sends it there, and it's in his dad's house in Thunder Bay right now, still hanging there, autographed. Carter Hutton jersey, like just the fans sent it back. The family has it. And Carter Hutton then went on to have an incredible NHL career.
That's amazing. A lovely story. He's a great broadcaster, too. He's on the NHL Network
awesome.
All the time. And I think his analysis
so
is just, I think he's bang on. Your favorite sport to cover outside of hockey?
Horse racing. I've done the Preakness 13 times now, and I'm moving to New York in a month, and we'll get a chance to do a lot more of that and doing the Belmont Stakes and
cool.
hopefully the Kentucky Derby at some point. But horse racing's been my love. My dad, my grandfather worked as a teller at Philadelphia Park Racetrack back in the day, so my dad's taken my brother and I to the track since we were 3 or 4 years old
neat.
And been in horse racing ever since.
Was it extra exciting when journalism won?
It was fun.
For me.
It was fun. It was fun to finally,
right?
finally see journalism win.
Right.
Because that usually doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. I appreciated that as well.
We have down here Olympic highlight. We know there's the TJ Oshie. Outside of the TJ Oshie, what's another one that may come to your mind?
Yeah, Henrik Lundqvist beating Finland in the gold medal game in 06. I was lucky enough to be there as a fan in the first row behind Henrik for two of those periods. And just
amazing.
What hockey matters to Sweden and Finland, to play in a gold medal game at the Olympics in Turin. Henrik Lundqvist stood on his head. Nick Lidström scores the winning goal. Mm-hmm. Like the amount of star power in that game. Antero Ninomaki was the other goalie, who I grew up in Philly, like watching Antero Ninomaki with the Flyers for all that time. But Henrik Lundqvist in the Olympics, like never got the chance to win the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. But he's got Olympic gold medal and Olympic silver medal, and just one of the greatest goalies of all time.
Best style of beer. Best style of beer.
I'm gonna go lager, but I'm very seasonal with my drinking. Mm-hmm. So if a brewery makes a good lager, they can do everything else well.
All right,
that's a good point.
I'm a stout gal myself, but
yeah,
stout in the winter, Victoria, is incredible. I love a good Guinness. I'm gonna plug my Irish Channel Bar in DC, which is my favorite bar on earth.
Do it
on a first name basis with all the bartenders. They pour an incredible Guinness. They actually have the certificate. They say they pour the perfect Guinness at the Irish.
It has to be a three pour, and it takes about 10 minutes if you're gonna do it properly.
You got to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, a work of art. Last one. What's great about Wawa?
Everything. and specifically the coffee. The coffee's fantastic. I was having this conversation with George Richards of Florida Hockey Now.
Yep.
When we were out for a few pints last night, that the sandwiches are incredible. You can get gas if you want to get it, but get a hoagie, get a sizzly, and absolutely get the coffee. I think it's a dollar coffee for another seven or eight days if you're a Wawa Rewards member, which we, of course, are.
We learned so much on this show.
Oh, we so did.
It's the most educated thing we have in our lives.
I wish practice didn't start in about half hour, but we'll get you out of here. Stephen, thank you for this. It's been a lot of fun. We've been wanting to do this, so I'm glad we can connect and certainly enjoy a day off today. Well, kind of not really for you, but enjoy the game tomorrow.
Thank you so much. You too.
Thanks, Stephen.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've been told you need a new furnace or have a bad heat exchanger, call Sears Heating and Cooling for a free second opinion. You'd be stunned at how often we run these calls and nothing is wrong. Sears Heating and Cooling, honest advice, fair pricing, and locally owned for almost eight decades. SearsHeatingCooling.com.